I'm speaking with Chris Ramsarup. Chris is an organizer with Justicia for Migrant Workers in Southern Ontario. Justicia is an organization that works with migrant and undocumented agricultural workers. Chris, welcome to No One's Legal Radio.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Jaggy.
Chris, recently, within the last few days, on May 27th, and from what we know, on May 28th, there were more raids of migrant workers in Southern Ontario, specifically in Leamington and Southwestern Ontario. This comes on the heels of what's been described as unprecedented raids back in early April of workplaces. Can you describe for our listeners and explain for our listeners exactly what has happened with these raids that have happened in Southern Ontario by the Canadian Border Services Agency in the past 2 months?
Well, definitely. I think we're seeing an attack and criminalization of undocumented and temporary foreign workers. Instead of addressing workplace abuses, other forms of immigration exploitation that's been going on, what CBSA, what Immigration Canada are doing is attacking workers, criminalizing workers. Now, in April of April the 3rd, over 100 workers were picked up in Syracuse Farms in Bradford, Ontario. Bradford is an hour north of Toronto. This was both a chicken catcher facility and a carrot farm. And we know that a large group of temporary foreign workers from Thailand were also picked up during this raid. Just to give you a kind of a heads up what the temporary foreign worker program is, it's an employer-driven program that has workers tied to one specific employer. Talking to some of these workers, we know that many of them were working under exploitative conditions, many of them weren't getting hours. So what they were trying to do was trying to find work here in Canada. And for that, these workers were criminalized, and they were sent home. So that's what the original raid in Bradford that we many of us migranted and ones illegal justicia became aware of. Other contacts or other friends, we found out in Leamington just a few days ago, and Leamington close to Windsor, about an hour and a half outside of Detroit. Nine women, including one woman who's pregnant, were picked up at Lakeside Produce, the greenhouse in Leamington, Ontario. These women were told, from what we understand, to go to a meeting. And at that meeting, immigration was there, picked them up. They were held in a jail, so a regular jail, which, you know, these violations that these workers are doing are really, they're not criminal intent. These are just people trying to work. But they were put, you know, to face the harshest parts of our law. And we suspect that many of these women in both this raid as well as the previous raid beforehand aren't being told of their proper rights. They're not being accorded proper legal representation. And even irrespective if we're following proper process, the process does not work. It's not in favor for undocumented migrant workers. So despite, you know, our anger towards procedural failures, we have to look at the larger failure of our immigration system.
Chris, you, along with your colleagues in groups like Justicia for Migrant Workers, No One's Illegal in Toronto, Migrante, and many, many other groups working in different ways are on the front lines of offering support and fighting against these raids. And I'm wondering if you could provide some context and some analysis to these raids. Are these unprecedented? Are these new? Are these simply manifestations of a reality that has been ongoing for many years, but that we just know about better because of better networks of support? Explain for us a bit why we've seen these raids, mass raids, where dozens, in some cases hundreds or more, about 100 workers are rounded up at one time at workplaces.
I think it's twofold. First, I'm of the belief that these type of raids on a smaller capacity are ongoing, right? A lot of times we didn't have the support network to hear about them. However, there has been a distinct change, a distinct shift in policy of these larger raids. The last one, the Syracuse Farms in Bradford, CBSA, you know, proudly announced on their website that this was unprecedented. This is the first time in GTA, you know, i.e. Canadian history, that they've, you know, arrested so many people. And this also falls on the heels of another large raid in Mississauga, Ontario, in about exactly a year to the date. So we're definitely seeing a shift in the Tory immigration policies by the federal conservatives, which are, one, going through more guest worker programs or indentureship programs on the first place, but second of all, choosing to spend its resources to, you know, to attack and criminalize undocumented workers. And third of all, I think the Auditor General is talking also in a report from last year about, you know, the effectiveness or the lack of enforcement, quote-unquote, by CBSA to try to pick up people who are undocumented. So we're definitely seeing a shift away from, you know, trying to engage in family reunification, trying to at least have a discussion about compassionate policies to something which is cruel and, I guess, inhumane punishment.
one reason that people have given in justifying these raids or in explaining these raids is the financial crisis and how migrant workers, immigrant workers, non-status workers, undocumented workers become useful scapegoats. What do you think of that idea, that in the context, we can't simply see it as a coincidence that these raids happen in a context of continued or increasing economic insecurity?
I wholeheartedly agree with that. Just to give you an example of the xenophobic and racist comments coming out of our politicians, in Alberta about 2 months ago, the Minister of Labor, his name is Minister Goudreau, said that what should happen is that these workers should be, with the temporary foreign workers, this is, they should be just sent home. So what we're seeing is a scapegoating of temporary workers, of undocumented workers, predominantly in areas with high unemployment. So, you know, definitely the first analysis point is, yes, you know, undocumented migrant workers, immigrants are being scapegoats. Second of all, though, just to, you know, to contradict that, many of these workers are working in industries which have high turnover rates. There is still high labor shortage. In a sense, they're doing the work that no one will do, and the reason why is because the labor standards are not enforced. There are very rare and weak limited employment standards. And second of all, the lobby of the agriculturalists. The agricultural lobby is quite strong, and they keep pushing for deteriorated rights. So definitely people are working in segregated and racially segregated occupations, which are highly dangerous, which are highly exploitative. So in a sense, they're not taking away jobs for Canadians. They're not driving down wages. And they are not engaging in tactics that deem them as criminals, which our government's trying to portray them as.
Chris, in the mainstream media, and often we repeat this as well, we speak about different workplaces, we speak about the ethnic origin of workers, we speak about statistics and numbers. But one thing that's quite clear is that when you're working on the front lines and in support of people, these people are our friends, they're our family. Each person who's picked up, who's deported, who's imprisoned, who's living in fear, is someone with a story and with a voice. Could you talk more about those realities that I know you're aware of? You work side by side by people who are getting picked up. This has been sort of exposed in a huge way with the raids that happened in April and then now once again in May in Southern Ontario. So speak about that lived reality by these workers.
You know, you're exactly right. This is more than numbers. This is more statistics. It's human faces with these people who are being picked up. And I think part of this is that support network that's developing that you alluded to earlier, Jaggi. In both of the raids that we know, and every piece of information that that occurs about immigration raids, it's our friends, it's our family members, it's our community members who are picked up or who are almost picked up. In April, we became aware of it because of allies on the ground, both in Leamington, Ontario, as well as in Toronto, of former agricultural workers, of undocumented workers. So this is, I guess, one of the first ways we found out about it. This most recent raid, other friends of us almost got picked up in this raid. So there's a human face. Many of these people have families to feed back home. One person, for instance, has quite a sick child that depends for medications for the livelihood that these people have taken up over here, number one. Number two, with the temporary foreign workers, many of these workers are they pay tens of thousands of dollars to come to work for low-wage jobs in Canada. These are people who cannot go back because they will be facing the loss of property, physical and psychological abuse, and numerous other forms of injustices if they go home because they haven't paid their debts. So there definitely is a humane face that needs to be seen in all this. The last raid, for instance, a woman who was pregnant was picked up. You know, all she was trying to do was provide for her family. And I think that's kind of the crux of the people we need to remember, that these are people putting food not only on our table, but putting food for their families across the globe. And to know that these lives are destroyed because of our immigration policy, that they're going to go home, unemployment, which has been caused through neoliberal and capitalist policies for the Americans and Canadians, is a double whammy that no one should be afforded.
Chris, so one way that the Canadian Border Services Agency is justifying their raids is that they're upholding the law, that for some reason they're maintaining law and order. But you know of specific cases where the role of the CBSA in these raids hasn't been just to create anxiety and fear and add to the exploitation of migrant workers, but actually to undermine processes of justice where migrant workers who stood up to workplace harassment and ill treatment are now having their cases essentially sabotaged because of these raids. Can you speak about those kinds of cases that have come up and what you've been doing with your allies to respond to that?
Yeah. I want to start off with a specific, then I want to go to the larger example. So there was one sister involved in a sexual assault case. The employer is responsible for an organization or a company called Prestige Foods. And about a year ago, we became aware of the situation at Prestige Foods, where the workers had their passports withheld, they had curfews, they were working on dangerous conditions, they had a two-tiered wage system where they're owed at this point millions of dollars. So, you know, through a friend of a friend, I became acquainted with many of the workers. And we started building a process and doing the trust relationship. We started engaging in workshops. We started, building, besides, I guess, trust, you know, friendship and camaraderie with these workers. And we also found out that Prestige Foods was a unionized facility with the Canadian auto workers. And the employer's idea, and historically how they've used racialized people, was try to union bust and get these Thai workers and Mexican workers to the union. But working with all these workers together with the Canadian workers, the plant was saved for the union. The decertification votes that occurred didn't go the way that the employer wanted. So after the involvement of Justicia and many on-the-ground allies, the CAW became more involved in the workers' lives. And through their involvement, they were able to put the employer in jail. The employer currently faces 23 or 26 counts of sexual assault, several counts of physical assault, and breach of probation. Now, throughout this entire process, many of the workers, you know, once again, these are temporary foreign workers tied to an employer, come up an employer-driven program. Many of them were, you know, faced sexual assault. Many of them were sick and tired of exploitative conditions. So somebody who faces these conditions, they resist, they run. And many of these workers ran from that location. They chose to work at other locations, including Cerro Farms in Bradford. And during this this immigration raid, instead of CBSA doing their homework to figure out who they picked up, they were about to deport this one person who was involved in the sexual assault case. And as a result of the different groups on the ground, the CAW, they were able to convince the Crown, convince various other, I guess, judicial means to stop the deportation of this one individual. And because of that last-minute intervention, with only a few hours left to go, that worker had a stay of their deportation, and now they have a temporary residence permit. But that kind of shows you that, you know, that they did not do their work on the ground. They have not really analyzed the conditions of the program to force people to run. And third of all, many of these workers, in some sense, you know, if you want to use human trafficking arguments, would be covered under this. Many of these workers pay $10,000 to come to Canada with interest on top of that. Many of these workers still have their passports being withheld, and they're only going to get their passports back if they give $1,200 to $1,500 to these recruiters. Third of all, many of these workers were shipped from one place to another and didn't really have a choice in that matter either. So, but instead of, you know, those arguments that were produced by the legal team that's engaged in this, CBSA said, well, we're not really interested in these stories, that this is not important. This is not important to our, quote-unquote, investigations. So once again, workers are doubly criminalized. They're criminalized through exploitation at work. They're criminalized through recruitment processes. And they're criminalized through government policies and procedures that don't act in their interest.
Chris, there were mobilizations in Southern Ontario in mid-April in order to raise awareness and also try to prevent the deportation of the approximately 100 workers that were picked up in the raids at Brantford and elsewhere in southwestern Ontario and southern Ontario. And I know that in some cases you succeeded in preventing deportations. Unfortunately, many of these deportations did happen, and that those cases are still making their way through the system. There's a brother and a sister who are facing deportation this coming Saturday. Can you speak about their case and the ongoing mobilizing against these raids?
Right. Well, I can do their first names. Pytoon and Rujarada were also picked up in the raid. They chose to stay and to fight. The legal processes, they've gone through several early detention reviews. They tried to get CBSA to issue temporary resident permits for these workers because they were experiencing human trafficking. So several multiple efforts were attempted by the legal system and our legal team. However, the government said they weren't interested. They said that they didn't have the resources to engage in this as well, to do the investigation, which is also quite frustrating. They have the resources to pick up people, but they don't have resources to investigate how they became precariously employed or what type of immigration system they faced. So the workers, I guess, have been, you know, they're exhausted. They've been 2 months in that detention center. And for them, I think now they're going to be sent home, right? All their other options have ended. And it shows, once again, a failure of the immigration system to look at what conditions exist on the ground.
Chris, this weekend in Toronto, there's going to be a conference organized by No One's Legal Toronto and supported by groups such as Justicia to strategize around rapid response to raids. This is something that our American allies who fight Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, and their mass raids have unfortunately had to perfect as a technique. I'm wondering if you could share with us an idea of what it means to have a rapid response to raids and this level of engagement in the struggle. We've been doing support work. We've been fighting deportations as they come up. We've been fighting for better conditions, fighting for status for all. But it seems like we are now dealing with an American-style reality where literally daily we're going to be facing raids of workplaces and we're going to need to respond. So talk a bit about what those responses might look like and what we need to build.
Yeah, I think we have a lot to learn from our American allies and American comrades. They've done a hell of important work on the immigration raids and how to combat them. So I think for many of us involved in this last process, it's been a learning experience that, you know, where we need to still reflect on. Now, the need for a rapid response team is important. First of all, procedurally, with the legal impact that happens. Many of these workers or immigrant people who are picked up during these raids are not told their rights. So having a legal team there to act, to represent, and to address some of those legal irregularities is extremely, extremely important. Number two, the mobilization and the public on-the-ground support. The government tries to engage in their spin of showing that these workers have committed crimes. It's important for us to not respond to them, but to really start directing the conversation and to once again put a face to who these people are and not, you know, just some statistics or numbers or spin that CBSA or, you know, Minister Kenny tries to put on this issue. Public exposure, community allies, and also trying to network between the different organizations, which are social service organizations, health providers, legal institutions, and community organizations. I think the discussion and the kind of a coordination amongst all these different groups in Toronto and larger cities like Montreal and Vancouver, and also on the ground in small communities such as Leamington and Bradford, needs to happen, right? And I think this is one of the first steps to make sure that we have an infrastructure. To be honest, we didn't have an infrastructure when these raids happened. And that definitely showed, I guess, when, you know, as we were responding to what happened over the last month and a half. So we need to be better prepared. We need to have that infrastructure. And there needs to be a general coordination amongst different allies and comrades in the struggle.
Chris from Justicia for Migrant Workers via New York City. That's where the background noise is from. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us on No One's Legal Radio.
Yeah, best respect. And thank you so much, Shaggy.